You can sit with us podcast with Lexi B.
Mike Miller has worked exclusively in the consumer tech industry since 2017, focusing primarily on product and privacy. Before joining Strava, he worked at Facebook, Netflix, and Twitter. Prior to 2017, he worked for a Fortune 500 company developing best practices for building safe products. Mike learned the importance of consumer protection and strong data protection while working at the USAF JAG office. When not mentoring current and future privacy and product professionals, he enjoys spending time with his grandson and partner.
You can sit with us podcast with Lexi B.
Welcome, Mike. How are you?
Doing well. How are you doing?
I'm so good, and I'm so excited to have this conversation with you. Before we get started, because I know you so well, we have to tell the people how we met. Y'all, because of Mike Miller, I am still employed, okay? I can still pay my bills. So do you want to tell the story, or should I?
Why don't you go ahead and hit it, and I'll bring in a few highlights.
We were at this company that has a name that we're not going to use, and I was very, very new, and I remember I was in a meeting with a whole lot of people. Like, it was a huge meeting. And for folks who don't know, it is very unusual to have a meeting of like 30, 40 people, unless it's one of those like monthly team meetings or monthly organization meetings. But this is one of those, like, this was not one of those monthlies. Some stuff was going down. I was a newbie at work. I probably had been at work maybe 2 to 3 weeks. And I remember I saw you in the hallway a lot, but we had never had a chance to connect. And more importantly, we were both Black. So we're the only Black people in this room, which is very easy to see. And I forgot something happened. Someone said something. I'm not going to lie, y'all. I was already in a bad mood. Like, the day had already started bad. Okay. Someone probably said something that morning during my breakfast. And I was like, I'm not the one. Or maybe I am. I just don't care anymore. And someone said something that really irritated me. And I looked at this person in the room across the table and I said, do not let the Stanford degree fool you, which of course caused the whole room to be very silent. And I remember in the moment, I did not care that I said it. Like, it wasn't like I said it and then I thought, ooh, that's bad. Like, I definitely gave off this face of like, I said what I said.
That's right.
And then I remember we left the meeting and Mike like physically grabbed my arm and put me into a conference room and basically said, well, you were right, but you can't say that. And that's how we met. Do you want to add anything to that?
No, that's exactly how it went down. And it was kind of funny. The part after that was, hey, do you know Lexi? Because everyone who's in the room was wondering who Lexi is and why she said what she said. Can I interpret that? So yeah. Part of the reason of pulling you in was like to say, hey, here's what's coming since you brought that up in the room. And also, here's the way we're going to form our relationship from there.
And then here's how you're going to keep your job moving forward.
That's right.
Because these people are still very shocked that was said. So yeah, y'all, we got to thank Mike and applaud Mike because I literally can pay my mortgage because of Mike Miller. So thank you, friend. Thank you. I really appreciate you.
Oh, you know, you're fam. We've been together for a long time. So, but that is the way in which we met. And hey, to spark that off, it's continued and it's been great. But we just try to keep each other employed.
Exactly. That's it. That's all you can do in capitalism, America. That's right. Pay your bills. Pay your bills. So what is in your coffee cup as we have this conversation this morning?
Yeah. No, it's interesting enough. I was actually going to use a different type of tea, but my daughter this morning was like, hey, we got this countdown to Christmas tea.
Oh, like an advent calendar?
It's an advent calendar with tea. And I was like, okay, this is cool. So it has two teas in it. And she gave me the one she can't have, of course. And was like, here you go. So it's a Black English tea. And it's on the second day of countdown to Christmas, right? Or excuse me, third day. Countdown.
Is it just a regular Black English tea? Which, by the way, I love a good just Black English tea. Or does it have something else in it?
Nope, mine's that's why she didn't want it. I'm good with just a straight Black English tea.
So she wanted the sexy teas. I do enjoy a sexy tea, but I also do enjoy just a Black English tea.
Yeah, she put the herbal tea with the nice flavor and something else.
Okay. She has the sexy tea. I get it. I get it. Okay. And where are your people from, Mike? How did you get here in this world? And how has that shaped who you are today?
Yeah. So, Lexi, you know, I have a very interesting path towards getting into the role I'm in. Before we talk about the role I'm in and what I've done to get there, my people and me, I am from Cincinnati, Ohio, actually.
Yep.
Midwest, but I was raised in a military environment. My dad was in the military, retired Chief Warrant Officer Michael B. Miller Sr., U.S. Army aviator. And he traveled and we traveled around the world. And so the United States and the world. So I never went west, but I spent a lot of time in the south and on the east coast, the Midwest, Northeast, and Germany. So that's where I was raised. My dad, though, is Bajan by heritage and ancestry. So West Indies, Barbados, grandmother, thing goes there. And then the other side, my mom is just, you know, just like all other African Americans, black, slavery, hails from Georgia, made their way freedom up to the north. We kind of know a little bit of that story. So that's my heritage. That's my ancestry. They're fighters. It's amazing. I just want to be real about that. So, and then the rest of the family, we kind of broke off and live in LA, which is kind of weird, strange. So the halfway through, they decided through separation, she went west and my aunt went west and took them, and they've been in LA, grew up, and believe me, you can see the difference between the Midwest folk and the California.
The LA folk. So how was it being this kid growing up in this half immigrant household with like a very immigrant father, it sounds like, and not just any immigrant, a Caribbean father. And for folks who have never spent time with Caribbeans, you need to. It is quite entertaining. It's its own source of flavor, literally and metaphorically in itself. And then this Black American mother, because I always tell people, I really feel like Caribbeans are my cousins. And I use the word cousin very strategically, because we are not siblings. We are definitely cousins, but we are definitely different. So how was that as a child mixing all those two things together?
So a lot of rulers on the hand, because you don't do something. That's the way it's taught versus another spanking on the butt. But it's interesting. So it's like, you know, chitlins for Thanksgiving dinner for a Southern, you know, African American slave ancestry mother. So there's that part, right? Black woman. And there's then my dad, who's like, you know, some of the other things like the wishbone and how we use that. And you don't put the purse down on the floor. My grandmother.
Oh, no.
Well, and these are just, you know, things that you need to be mindful of and keep track of, you know. But I will say the commonality was nice. And the commonality was that at any point, you'd be proud of who you are. That's something that I really appreciated in the household. And that was something my father was doing, becoming an engineer and then going to the military to be a pilot. My mother going in the nursing, being a nursing practitioner, was like, be proud of who you are. Raised during the era of Black Panther Rising, right? And being a part of all that movement and civil rights. So I will say, being in a household, being in other countries was hard. So being in Germany and then Germans wondering why I'm so capable and able to walk through the neighborhoods with my head raised high, led to many little kid fights, unfortunately. And then, you know, just being able to recognize that that's who you are in any country. And to stay true to my heritage.
Shout out to Germany. There are a lot of Black folk in Germany that are not native to Germany. So for folks who don't know that, you should definitely research that. Just like the Black migration, whether it's forced, whether it's, you know, a few years, like the military. But there are a lot of Black people up in Germany.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. My close friends were actually spent time in the military, German, or born and raised there. The place where you and I met, a couple of good, close, still friends in tech. They both were born there during military.
My childhood best friend was born on a German army base before we met in St. Louis. So, yeah.
But I love it. I loved it. It helped shape who I am today, knowing that I've seen outside the U.S.
So the topic that I want to discuss with you is, as you call it, being the elephant in the room, being the person that is not afraid to say the thing, either the hard thing, the hard truth. Say the thing that everybody gossips about when we're not in the room in front of the leader, that's the real root of the problem, but nobody wants to look at the leader and say, so the reason why we're having this issue on this project, on this program, on this build, whatever, insert whatever you're doing, is because we're not getting along, or is because of this one thing, or we don't have the money, or right. And I think that you have really built a career based on being comfortable acknowledging the elephant in the room, not just becoming the person that's always saying it, but literally building a thriving career on being that person. So my first question to you is, when did you recognize that it was important to be the person in the room, to just say the thing, like, this is why this is not working. Say the thing that everybody knows, but nobody wants to say. When did that moment happen for you?
Yeah. I guess I need to step back and kind of talk about who I am. And coming out of 16 years of a government career, I came into the private corporate structure, corporate environment. And in that one, of course, government's very regimented. It's very structured. And your role is one of those things. So, and I moved up in, of course, to lead in that role. But in doing so, it's kind of like you follow the chain of command. You know what I mean? You follow what's required. So you never really stepped out. But when I got out of government, I went to work for one of the largest defense contractors and technology companies in the world. Been around a long time, right? And I'm in, like you said, in our meeting, there was like us two, I think only one other Black person actually in that room with 30, 40 people. I was always the only Black person in the room. And I'm sitting there like thinking, wow, they know this. They already got to know this. They already know that this is an issue or this could be an issue. And then it was like, hey, if I speak up, you know, I've been told don't step out of bounds, right? All throughout my career in government. And then I get here and I'm like being told like, hey, just be there as a resource. You know what I mean? And I'm just watching it just wash over some of the big elephant in the room moments, right? And I finally was like, hey, I have to speak up. I have to say something. They need to know that there's this concern, there's this issue. Well, I did. And I immediately got backlash. I'm not even going to lie. Immediately.
From who, though? And where'd the backlash come from?
So no surprise probably to many. It was from a VP who was a white male who said, pretty much, who is this person, me, identify something, and why haven't you identified it, meaning his people and others in the room, before I did? They wouldn't speak up. They're not going to speak up. That's the point, right? There's fear with this bringing up the hardest thing or the thing that's most concerning that will cost the company money or more likely would cost expenditures and require a lot of work. And so that person spoke up, and then for one, it was like putting me in my place, right? Like, you shouldn't speak it up. And then second, I pay you all a lot more money than him. Why are you not speaking up about this? So after that, my director was like, hey, you know, you need to probably encourage them to speak up and give it to them. So work outside that in the network. And I was like, that seems so inefficient. Why don't I just say it in the room? You have me in the room. It was like, no, work outside. So I did that. And I did that until the chief financial officer was someone I started having to work with of the company. And he owned it. And so when I end up speaking with him, my VP was like, we're going to walk in here and you're not going to talk about X, Y, and Z. I said, okay. And once again, don't speak about the elephant in the room, right? I walk in and the chief financial officer says, hey, Mike, good to see you. See my VP. And first thing he does is he says, I want to know about X, Y, and Z. The elephant. He's like, I don't care. Let's talk about the elephant in the room. And she looks at me and she gives me the nod like, I'm not going to say it. You got to do it. And so I told him. And then from there, I have been saying what needs to be said in the room every single time. And I tend to be the only Black person in the room most times. But if I didn't, I learned that I didn't control the narrative for one about who I am. Because people then said, well, Mike didn't recognize this. Mike didn't see that. Mike's role. Or they thought through like, well, what's Mike's role? What is Mike doing? Why didn't Mike pick that up? Or Mike picked it up but didn't say anything. what's wrong? Is there a bigger concern? I control that narrative. My final
mistake. I think it's interesting because I think that we as a society, even as young as kids, like kids in a playground, we crucify people, whether you're 3, 15, you know, 25 or 50, we crucify them in these very formal settings, school and professional settings, for being the person that speaks up. The person that speaks up is always the one that gets hurt. And we see that in every form and capacity. I mean, even if you look at a child's textbook on history throughout the world, not just America. And when I say that, I'm talking about textbooks that tell the truth, because, you know, in this new age, we got a lot of textbooks that are not saying all the truths about what happened. But think about freedom fighting leaders who literally told the truth and then got murdered. Right. So we have all these images and behaviors of, if you tell the truth, you could die. Right. But coming back to you, I think what a lot of people don't realize is that just as there is many people who find you telling the truth in corporate spaces very daunting and very scary and will try to crucify you for it, there are actually a ton of people in power who love it because they just frankly don't have the time to not know what the hell is going on. And what I've learned in my career is that the elephant in the room, the person that can identify the elephant in the room and identify it in a clear and conscious way without necessarily blaming somebody else in the room, but just saying, this is what it is. They're the ones who actually move their career faster. And they're the ones that have most influence in the company. But what do you think about that?
It's so true. And you're spot on. I think this is a good time to introduce who I am and my role and where I came from. So I can say the company I work for is Strava, and I'm the data protection officer. So I'm one of few Black data protection officers in the world. And that's an interesting dynamic in itself, or plight. I'm also the deputy general counsel. And I report to a general counsel who's a Black woman, which is the first I've ever had, because I've never been in that position. Report to a general counsel who's either not a white woman or a white man. In this role, I manage both data protection, lead a team of data protection specialists, as well as security, cybersecurity, security engineers, security specialists, as well as also product and privacy counsel, which is probably where I've been the most, product and privacy counsel, building products and then privacy and privacy advancements for the company. So I share that to say that I had a rocket advancement once I came into consumer tech and came west from the south where I was at, and a Fortune 500 company, you know, as I said, defense contract, to now a leading consumer tech company in the West Coast, and being the person who would speak up and say things. So I went from individual contributor. I left a role as mid-level management to an individual contributor to take this experience. And in that time, I have grown in 7 years to deputy general counsel, data protection officer. And that reputation of being a person in the room is the one thing everyone heard when I was interviewing and applying and growing and moving in these different roles. So if I was not that person, I think I would not have made it to where I'm at, because they would not have taken a chance on me. I controlled the narrative of who I was, and people knew who I was versus, you know, he's in the room, but I don't see him very much. He doesn't speak up if they were to ask their constituents. Because they'll get it wrong. In tech, they ask their peers about you.
Oh, they ask their peers. They ask your mama. They ask your stepdaddy's cow. They ask everyone about you, okay? They do Google searches about you. I always tell people, clean up that internet portfolio, because they will find out. I have received jobs not because of the interview, but because of what people have said about me. I have been denied jobs because of what people have said about me. And that is the truth to the grave. Yeah.
So with that, to answer your question, it's because I was the person who spoke up in the room. I had these advancements. I've had this growth. And I was willing to go to some place that valued that each and every time. But speaking up in the room also has become my role and my job over these years. So having to speak up and say, you know, this is the risk you take if you do this, is not the thing no one wants to say to a CEO, COO, VP, senior VP, executive VP, but that is my job. That's literally my job. And I empower my team to do the same thing. That's also important. I want them to be the elephant in the room, to be able to speak up. And a lot of times they'll come back to me. They'll be like, did I do something wrong by saying that in the meeting or while the CEO was talking and asked questions and I spoke about it? And I'm like, well, you did a good job by speaking up and saying what needs to be said. But just like when you and I met, you still have to be mindful of the form in the delivery.
And it's so, the how. It's not the what. It's the how. Yeah.
That's right.
But I really want to honor the fact that you are one of those leaders who is encouraging that and then also teaching that skill. Because as you and I both know, that there are many leaders who would not encourage that and therefore not teach that skill for future leaders, right?
Oh, you're right.
I think that we do also, I want you to break down what a data protection officer is. Because for folks who don't know, a data protection officer, if they do not speak up in the room, they will lose their job. So let's go back to 2018 with good old-fashioned Uncle GDPR and tell us why all of these companies now have data protection officers and why it is literally your job. Like, you get paid to be the person who speaks up. And if you don't, you would lose your job.
GDPR came about out of the EU. 27 different countries came together in a commission in order to develop a regulation around privacy. It was a huge undertaking. It changed every environment, every different industry when it came to how they collected, used, retained, and deleted or erased data for all of their constituents, peers, and partnerships and users. It led to a framework that now has been mirrored by most other countries. So you will find that almost every country that has some interest in how data is used or how consumer technology is used will have some type of privacy act or regulation around it. For me, I got into it through compliance. The first time I heard about this was many years ago, 2015, 2013 is when it started, 2015. And they were like, hey, we got a notice from some regulators saying we may not be in compliance with the data. Back then, no one really cared. They were like, let me start working on it. But with 2017 to 2018 and the launch, GDPR, and it became effective, it became an immediate change and need for every business. That also required a data protection officer. That was one of the requirements with the new regulation. Which means this person was supposed to stand in an independent role to advise the business on how to comply with GDPR and also what think of the user and what's best for the user. Or I like consumer better, but that's the user and the data and how it's being used. Training, an effective structure for how the business entity should be, and also awareness with regards to a risk management approach towards how the data is being used through product development. The last part that I think people forget about mostly is they are supposed to also be accessible independently to the user. So the users can come to us directly, which you want, versus them going to a regulator and asking them, like, why didn't they delete my data? You rather them come to me, which, by the way, my email, and we have other avenues in which they can get their data or they can request certain things. But they would just email the DPO because that role is now recognized throughout the world when it comes to their rights and what they can do.
So every tech company / every company that uses consumer data has a DPO.
If they have any, which you can't, unless you really are sure you're just US-based or China-based or something like that, yes, they should have a designated data protection officer.
And if they do not, so if the EU, these 27 countries, finds out that they do not, it could be really bad as far as your product working, thriving in their countries.
There are places like, let's say you're still in the garage phase of your business and your consumer product, that doesn't make sense to have a data protection.
Yeah, but I mean, like, if you are an established company like yourself, and the EU finds out that you just don't want to have one, it's going to be a hard conversation. Am I right?
And that's exactly right. And that has been happening more in the last year because of some lawsuits where they're like, conflict has been a big thing within the courts in Europe for the data protection officer. Remember, they have to be independent. And they're doing other roles, which could be in conflict with them to keep the mindset to be independent and think of the user first. So yes, if you don't have that, that's one of the first things they're going to ask, like, registered your data protection officer, and who is it, and how can we get in touch with them? And they do that. And so you need to have that.
Oh yeah. These are the EU does not give idle threats, family. They will call. Okay. They will call, they will email, they will send a beeper, they will send a Harry Potter owl. They are not playing with y'all. And then also to add to that, before we go back to our elephant in the room theme, is that I think a lot of people don't know is that when GDPR hit, it also, a lot of other countries around the world were watching because they were saying, let's see if the EU can get away with this. Because if they do,
that's right,
we're going to have our own. So now we have things coming out of Asia. We have a huge one that just came out of Brazil that, if you ask me, is a copy paste of the GDPR, minus a few little, you know, specific Brazilian things. To me, it looks like a copy paste. We may have something coming out of the United States. Miss Khan, who is in the government.
That's right.
Shout out to Miss Khan, who leads a lot of this stuff for the United States. I would not be surprised if her team comes out with some stuff. So people, y'all need to be watching. Y'all need to be reading and watching. This is a real thing.
Yeah. Just a pin on that. It's interesting enough, you bring up the U.S., so it's not required a designated data protection officer, but the data protection officers have had to understand how U.S. laws, like you said, we're working on this American Privacy Act. It's for federal level. Yeah, it's stuck in Congress, and they're still debating through it because it has avenues of minor protection, or I should say, highlights of importance of minor protection. So I've seen the data protection officer role become one, not just of compliance, but also of risk, and also become that, like, that trust and safety, that integrity champion as well for how we protect minors and others, just like abuse and bullying and harassment on these platforms. So that's a big deal in the U.S. And you think it's solved. Now, AI is now my next big tackle, right? It's everywhere and it's becoming pushed. They're pushing it to the data protection officers to establish a, you know, manage the governance program around it and ensure that it's protecting and doing what it needs to do with regards to ensuring there's no biasness, right? And it kind of ties into the principles of data protection. So that's the other thing that we're having to tackle. And you're seeing a lot of that attention, not just in the EU, but also in the US.
So back to the elephant in the room. If someone came to you and said, Mike, I listened to this podcast and then I was the elephant in the room yesterday and I got in huge trouble, what is your response to that?
Dig deeper. So, and this is real. You and I have had these conversations many a times. If they're pushing back, and let's just say it's an engineering team, right?
I love our engineers, but they love to push back.
And I'm going to use mine just to make it really simple. So they're pushing back. Let's say, hey, I spoke up and say that we need to really work on developing our cookie policy and our cookie ban. And for those of you who don't know, that gives you the option to opt out of further communications or aligns and identifies what's necessary in order to track you while you're using these sites. That's a short and dirty version. And those need to be updated. They need to be assured because you have new tracking mechanisms, you have new partners, you have flow of your data from in and out. And a lot of times, that's a lot of engineering effort to change how that banner looks and what the policy is with regards to what can be used, because then your marketing team may not be able to do certain things because you have a consent flow. So if you stand up and you say, like my team member just did, and said, hey, I need to go and do an inventory of all of our tracking mechanisms, and I need to do this scan and then find out how we're using it on the back end, that's a lot of work. And so it is something that needed to be done. It needs to be done. But then the team members might be like, you know, hey, why are you bringing this up now? It's just, to be real, I don't have this on the roadmap. Can it wait till I get it on the roadmap? Can we wait a couple of years? We want to push out some other products. Just an example.
And then also interrupt you. It's not the sexy thing to build.
It's not exciting. It's not
sexy. Because remember when we were at Twitter, we actually worked on this. Yes. And I remember the engineers getting mad at me because the elephant in the room was, so you want me to fix a cookie banner instead of creating the next big thing on Twitter? And I was like,
that's right.
Yes. And they were like, no, I want to work on the sexy thing. I want to work on the thing that when we are at our company, you know, quarterly company all hands gets the praise. And your little cookie banner, Lexi, nobody gonna care about. I want to work on the ice cream. I don't want to work on the vegetables. So like, also, I think with engineers, you got to make vegetables look sexy for them to want to do it.
So that's what we're doing. That's exactly part of my role and my team's role, is to try to make that look sexy. And it's hard. I'm not going to lie. It's hard to do because you and I have been through it. And this is one of the things where GDPR came into play, right? And there's other regulations come into play, like you said, with Brazil. And if you have to have these notices and have to have these awarenesses and opt-outs. But to get back to it, yeah. So you speak up. They don't like it. They push back. You have to be the one that goes in and says, hey, what is the real problem? And I've kind of identified a couple of those factors, right? It wasn't sexy. It's not interesting. It's going to interrupt the sexy stuff. It's a compliance measure. Can it wait? Then you have to show them. I hate to say it. I don't like scare tactics. It's like, okay, if we wait, then here's a $10 million or $2 million fine that someone else had because they waited. We have that notice and awareness. Let's take advantage of it, right? Let's go ahead and do that. I tell them the risk levels. Here's high, medium level, low risk. If it's low risk, okay, we'll take and say, here's the SLA, a time for mitigation. You and I have been through that. We've talked about that. But when it comes to things like that, that's not, people don't want to hear it. And it's the elephant in the room because people keep pushing it to the side. They keep wanting to say it's later, later, don't worry about it. But then in the elephant in the room are the bigger things like, hey, this is going to result in a breach. That's a big thing that people recognize the data protection officers involved in. And you hear about them because you see the notices and you get them in the mail and you see them in your applications. So the breaches, and you have to speak up and say, if you do that, this could be a breach, and the breach would be this. And that's a hard call.
And it'll be a public breach, which I think a lot of people, you know, people don't hear about the altered cookie banner, but they do hear about the Washington Post article of insert company had a data breach. And nobody wants to be that company. Nobody wants those investigative journalists. And Lord knows, nobody wants to be that CEO or that head of legal that has to navigate those conversations with PR and comms.
Oh God.
In the Post.
You got it.
At least I don't. And Lord knows I don't get paid enough to do it, but like, I don't, even if I got paid enough to do it, I don't want to do it.
Yeah. Breaches are probably the most well-known part or role of a data protection officer and legal entities in which they have to designate them and work through them to be mitigated. And you collab with everybody. So the business, you deal with the engineers, you deal with the product, you deal with the legal, you deal with compliance, you deal with it all. And the thing is hard, like you said, I just had one, unfortunately, we had one this year, but we did the right thing. And we told our consumers what happened and why it happened. And you and I have been to Twitter, where we were part of the largest breach that Twitter's had, and able to show and say, hey, these are the type of notices that need to be made. And it took months to fix that, right?
It wasn't a fun quarter. I remember that. It wasn't a fun quarter.
Yeah, that was really hard. Sleepless nights.
It was not a fun quarter. In closing, I think we need to address the how, because we keep saying it's not about the what, it's about the how. What are your tips and tricks? How does one say what needs to be said, but in a way that is received? And for the record, I'd like to make the caveat that regardless of how well you position this verbiage, somebody always going to be mad. Okay. As my grandmother used to say, they talked about Jesus, what they going to do to you. So you need to just get over that. But there are ways to say it in a way that you are received by the most important person in the room, that you're received, and that it is considered a powerful statement for you to do that. How do we do this? What kind of tone do we use? Do we use a lot of data to set the tone? How do you raise your hand and say, this is actually the issue?
Yeah, I think you marked the how is the most important part, because we talked about form and delivery. So don't do like so many have and just say, because we have this feedback kind of growing, I don't know what the best word to use is, just approach in all of technology and now in the other businesses, that you give us feedback. Feedback empty is not going to be beneficial to the business or to help you as far as you get the reputation of being the person who identifies the elephant in the room and comes up with a solution. What I'm trying to say is we want to be the solution artists, right? And we do that all the time already. I'm going to be honest, I see it so many times, but they do it in private. So when you speak up, you want a couple things. One, it's in the right forum. So all hands, if you know what all hands is, that's where you bring people in and you talk about the great things the company's working on and where it's going. Probably not the best place to bring up the elephant in the room. but it'll probably be passed over. Take note of it, right? They go back and say, what's the data? Yeah, do a little research, figure it out. Like, what's going on here? Why is it not, why is it the elephant in the room? Understand it. Get the historical context of why people keep pushing off. What's the current plan? There's that why and what you would need, who you would need. And then come forward with the data. And I say also now the risk. You have to be a risk manager in every role now, no matter what you're doing. You have to think of the risk to the company, reputation. Not just compliance measures. And that's what I teach too, is a lot of times to say, hey, it's not just about the compliance requirements, it's about the reputation of the company and also the revenue defense that we could go through. So once you have that, like me, like I told you that one time I said something in a room, that was like the fifth time I've been in that room and heard something happen and everyone just passed over and glossed over it. And I did my research and I got my data and I spoke up. And that's why that white VP looked to the team and was like, how does he have this and we don't? That's what it was, really. And I learned really quickly that being the person that comes in there, not only, like I said, has elevated my career, has also built a stronger reputation for who I am, and knowing that I will have facts and data to support what I do. And in doing so, you don't have to come with a solution. You just have to say, I know certain teams who could work on this and devise a plan for a solution. And this is the impact and risk level. So to summarize really quickly, it's like, hey, recognize it a couple times because it's going to happen. I tell people it's on the shelf somewhere. Second thing is go back and do your historical context and current review. Third thing is identify the teams, and actually while you identify the teams, probably find a principal engineer if it's an engineering matter that will probably support you. And you'd be surprised how many people will follow through if the principal engineer gets on board, the staff engineer.
Or like a technical architect. You need that one powerful, and usually for the record, they are the ones who are like, you are so right. I want to dabble into this. So always find that engineering partner.
Product manager, and you'll probably be in a good position to come forward with that. And always have your legal support. And then the last thing is when you do it, pick the forum. Pick the right forum. You know what I mean? Sometimes I do it. I go ahead and amass a group, come into it, have the meeting, and then I identify that elephant in the room and I present it to them so that they're not caught off guard in another forum where it's not appropriate for them. And my delivery is not to be shock and awe. Now, I talk about shock and awe in some of my, when I do panels, but don't do shock and awe when you're trying to do this. You want to make sure that they are comfortable and will accept and think about it.
Well, thank you, Mike, for all of your expertise. Thank you for who you are, what you represent, and the space that you're in. I think sometimes phenomenal people like yourself, you're just in the go mode that you don't realize the paths that you are creating. You don't realize the people that are watching you from afar who may not know you, who've never seen you, never touched you, never any of those things, but are watching and saying that because of Mike, I can. And I do want to give you those flowers. Also, selfishly, thank you for being a mentor and a sponsor and a friend in my life. Thank you for always telling me the truth, because it is that truth that has made me so much better in my career and successful in my career. And I do want to honor that publicly and just say thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Lexi. You're a family, so I appreciate it. And I appreciate this opportunity to speak with you.
You can listen to You Can Sit With Us episodes on Spotify. For more information, visit our website, lexib.com, and our LinkedIn account at LexiB. And make sure to follow our podcasts on Instagram @SitWithLexiB. And don't forget to subscribe to our Spotify channel.